family, partners, and friends, what is going on? Q1 is in the books, the solar eclipse is officially at our six, and it's time to get the pools ready for summer, as summer will be here before we know it. This is Andy Erickson, your host of the award-winning podcast Smart Acids, and I'm here with the Marco to my Polo, the heartbreaker Chris Ernst. Heartbreaker, man, how you holding up?
Really good, Andy. How about you?
I'm doing okay. That's great. Hey, fun fact. Did you know the game Blind Man Bluff, played in the water, or more formally known as Marco Polo, was allegedly named after 13th century Italian explorer Marco Polo?
I didn't have verification, but I assumed.
Now, there are a few theories of thought on how it got its name. One is he had no idea where he was going when he set sail to China. Seems to make sense. The second is that he was lost in the desert of China with his family, and he thought he heard his family's voices calling him by yelling Marco, and then they obviously would say Polo. And the third, which is a rather lengthy explanation, is the Mongolian emperor Kublai Khan liked the Polo family so much that he invited them to his daughter's wedding. On the journey to the wedding, their ships encountered some severe storms, and the family was split up at sea. They were unable to locate each other until somebody started yelling out Marco, who was the leader, and then obviously he would respond Polo. Kind of crazy, right? But anyway, there you have it. Some non-value-added knowledge. That's just the smartasses team spitting back some truths to you.
They had multiple ships?
In the story, yes.
Number three seems implausible.
I just wanted to say Mongolian and Kublai Khan.
I know.
All right. We have an absolute blinder of an episode today as we are bringing our very own first mate, the Starbuck Jeff Dixon, who is Univar Solutions Director of International Trade Services, and he is going to drop some knowledge on what's happening at sea. So let's get at it and give it a tasty. Starbuck, Mr. Jeff Dixon, man, welcome to Smartasses Pod. How you holding up?
I am doing awesome. Thanks for having me on.
Well, we're excited to have you. Any chance you can provide our listeners with a little background or a glimpse of the journey that you've been on working as the International Trades Director?
Love to. So I've been with Univar about 5 years. And before that, I had a career of about 20 years at Maersk Line, you know, where I managed our port and terminal operations, customer service and import and export operations. And then spent about another 10 years at DHL Global Forwarding in the Ocean Freight and Supply Chain Division. So this was coming into Univar is a very natural step for me, you know, to migrate from 3PL and carrier side into cargo owner side. And so over the past 4 years, we have developed and evolved our International Trade Services Group, where we have done a fantastic job in reimagining our global supply chain and doing a lot in order to prepare us for whatever that next event is.
Awesome. That's great. Well, thank you. Before we get into like the real good stuff, we're hoping you'd play a game with us. It's completely related to vessels, boats, and ships.
All right.
Are you willing to play?
Yes.
All right. First question out of the gates. The three ships that were part of Christopher Columbus's expedition to America.
The Nina, the Pinta, and the Santa Maria.
All right, woo-woo, one for one.
Well done, Jeff. Question two, what is the ship-related term that means you are at, near, or toward the stern of a ship?
At the ship-related term, you're at, near, or in the rear part of the ship. Well, the ship is the stern, and when you go in reverse, it's going astern. I don't know.
The answer is aft.
Oh, go to the aft part of the ship. Okay.
All right, number three, we're one for two. Conspiracy theory that it was not this ship, but the sister ship to the Olympic that actually sank in April 15th, 1912 in the North Atlantic Ocean, 4 days into the voyage from Southampton to New York City.
The Titanic.
All right. I didn't even have to give him the hint that the heart of the ocean was on it.
Yeah, Andy was ready with a phone a friend hint.
I was going to call Jack Dawson. I was going to call Rose. It was all going to happen.
That's fantastic. All right. What's that? Two out of three? Question four, Jeff, you ready?
Yes.
In 1967, Milton Bradley introduced the game Battleship, which consists of five different classes of ships. I'm sure you knew that. Mm-hmm. How many hits in the game does it take to sink the carrier, which is, of course, the largest vessel in the game?
Five.
Boom.
That was like confident. Like,
yeah, that was quick.
He was playing it last night. All right, last question. March 9th, 1862, Civil War naval engagement at Hampton Roads, Virginia. A harbor at the mouth of the James River. Notable as history's first duel between ironclad warships and the beginning of the new era of naval warfare. Can you name those two warships?
I think those would be the Ironclads. I can't name those two.
All right. They both start with an M. And the first
The Merrimac?
That's one.
And all right, give me the clue for the second one.
Old school computers had them as the screen.
Monitor. Merrimac and the monitor.
Boom. Nice job. We'll give them half credit.
Yeah, so that's really well done.
3.5 out of 5. That's still much better than the Heartbreaker did.
Correct.
All right. Thank you, Jeff. Well done. Appreciate it. Let's get into the good stuff. Okay. The recent accident near the Baltimore port obviously caught the nation's attention and caught us off guard, and it's pretty kind of a sad story. What can you tell us about this disruption and others, and how would you describe the overall health of the global shipping network?
Honestly, I mean, that was a tragic event of epic proportions, and that there is a severe disruption to the Port of Baltimore. But, you know, one of the things that I also take a look at is the resiliency of the global shipping network. And so with the fact that, you know, the Port of Baltimore is closed, the ocean carriers have been able to divert ships to Norfolk and also to New York. To discharge the freight. The ports have stepped up to be able to accommodate the additional volume. You've had the rail carriers, you know, that are running north-south trains. So there's one thing to speak about the global shipping industry right now. It's their ability to adapt and the resiliency they have to alter the network in response to, you know, some of these events that happen.
Awesome, Jeff. Thank you. So now let's talk politics, geopolitics. What are the impacts from your perspective around geopolitics and it relates to the global shipping network? Challenges, opportunities? Give us your full 360.
Yeah. So for the geopolitics, I mean, it's amazing when we take a look at how logistics has evolved over the past probably 5 to 7 years. Initially, you were worried about cost, service, and quality for your logistics operations. Now you have to take into a multitude of different factors, and geopolitics comes into play with this. So what do we mean by that? Well, when we take a look at, you know, what's happening right now in the Red Sea, that you've got the Houthis that have attacked, you know, the major ocean carriers as they have gone through the Red Sea. So what's happened is that now the vessels are going around the Cape of Good Hope, which what does that mean for us in terms of how geopolitics has impacted us in our wallets? It's a longer transit time. We have more carrying costs with the cargo coming in either to Europe or to the U.S. It is also increasing the cost that we have for bringing cargo in because the carriers are assessing fees and rates took a major spike as a result of that. So that's just one aspect. The other aspect, you know, that we take a look at is the impact of the China plus one, you know, where over the past two administrations that there have been significant new levels of tariffs that have been applied to imports coming in from China. And in general, countries are taking more protectionist view of their essential commodities and rare earth materials and keeping them more, you know, for domestic use. So one of the things I think is the most telling factor of how the situation has evolved is that 10 years ago, China was our number one trading partner. But as a result of the politics and the relationship we have, Mexico now is our number one trading partner, followed by Canada, and then it's China. So that gives an indication of how we're shifting some of our sourcing and our international supply chain towards the countries that border us and having less reliance on imported materials that come in from Asia or even China.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate it. Let's jump to the next question here and talk weather. So climate change, water levels, whether driven by regulations or things meant to address it, all those kind of impacts. What can you tell us about environmental and climate impacts on global shipping?
Well, the climate impact is real and it's becoming more tangible every day. What we've seen is a real impact on the global shipping network, you know, as a result of climate change. Number one, through the Panama Canal or the Gatun Lakes that feed the locks with water, they were low. And so it have the capacity for ships transiting the canal, which basically impacted a lot of LNG, bulk carriers, and to some degree, the container ships. Number two, how climate is impacting the global shipping environment is there's a major push in terms of sustainability and conversion to alternate fuels on vessels that are coming online over the next 3 to 5 years. where over 30% of those vessels are going to have alternate fuels. So what does that mean in terms of the climate? Number one, converting to fuels that are more sustainable, such as ammonia, methanol, LNG, and electrical and electric, if you will, that are cleaner burning. But with that, the cost to produce those alternative fuels is higher. So the cost of purchasing is going to be higher. So the cost of shipping eventually is going to be higher as the carriers pass on those costs. So the last part of it is, from the regulatory perspective, is that you've got carbon taxes being assessed for any cargo that transits in Europe. So if it's going through a port or it's loading or discharging a port, there's about a $70 to $100 surcharge that is being placed on every container to offset carbon footprint that the vessels have, which are about 3% of the total global carbon emissions.
Oh, wow. Well, thank you, Jeff. And now that we've talked a little bit about the global warming a little bit, and we've talked politics, and I've since poured myself a bourbon, I've called my Uncle Bob, and I'm bringing my Nana in. So we might as well talk about religion. Just kidding. Let's transition a little bit. How has data and technology and AI in particular impacting supply chains?
So let's build it from a couple of different perspectives. So let's take a look at it from what's happening with AI, because AI is finding its way into a lot more logistics platforms. You know, Univar is a huge user of AI. And so that is a new technology that I think is going to become more prolific in helping us manage our supply chains. But in terms of technology, let's take a look at it from a couple different perspectives. Number one is that there was a statistic that I read that 17% of all cyber attacks are for companies that are in the transportation industries, and then another 17% for manufacturing. So what that means is that while we see a proliferation of technology, we see a proliferation of risk in terms of potential cyber attacks, you know, against, you know, transportation companies. Top four major carriers have experienced cyber attacks. Some of the major freight forwarders and NVOCCs have experienced cyber attacks that have brought down their networks. So it is real and pervasive. And the other way that I think we should look at technology is, how is it a threat? So if you take a look at how AI is being introduced in port automation, there is a major emphasis on making ports more productive, to make them more fluid, to be able to use the land more efficiently, because many ports are landlocked. They don't have room to grow. So we have to increase productivity. What that also means is from the longshore labor that works in those ports, you know, they can view some of the proliferation of technology and AI as a threat to their jobs. So what's happening is that we're seeing in the negotiations that the ocean carriers and employers have with the longshore labor, we've seen it in Canada. We've seen it on the West Coast of the United States. We've seen it now happening for the current negotiations that are going on between the ILA and USMX for the East and Gulf Coast ports. In addition to health and compensation, saving jobs is one of the top priorities for the union, because they do view port automation as a threat. And a lot of that automation is being fostered by, you know, investments in AI. So the more automated ports get, we have to evolve not only our workforce, but also the ocean carriers evolve their terminal operations. And it has to be a partnership. It can't be a win-lose situation. Those are the three areas around technology that I think we have to be aware of and that we plan for, being, you know, the logistics professionals that we are.
Fantastic, Jeff. Thank you. Bring it home for me with this one last question. What is the one takeaway you would like our audience to go away with here?
I think it's be vigilant. You know, you have to take a look at the global supply chain from a holistic view and understanding, as we talked about, the geopolitics, the climate, the shocks to the system. Then that allows, if you do that, you build an agile supply chain, working closely with your partners and suppliers. And then what that allows you to do is be more prepared for the next event that happens. But it's not a question of if, but when we'll have another shock to the system, and we will have to adjust our supply chains for that.
Fantastic, Jeff. Thanks. Really great stuff. We appreciate your time and the maritime knowledge.
All right. Hey, thank you, guys. I enjoyed being with you. Enjoyed being a part of this. I'm a fan.
All right, everyone. That is a wrap on another episode of the Smart Assets Podcast. We hope you enjoyed this trip around the world via our shipping network. Thanks to Jeff Dixon for his insight and to everyone for spending time with us.
Smart Assets, breaking things down for the chemicals and specialty ingredients market, one boron at a time. Smart Assets is part of the Univar Solutions Podcast Network.